Hello and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. In studio with me this week is West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. We should say, though, before we get started on today's program, that this show has been pre-recorded, so unfortunately we cannot take your phone calls today. But remember, you can always email us with questions for any of our four mayors at any time. That email address is ask, that's A-S-K, at WBAA.org. And you can tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Well, the mayor is doodling across from me. I'm obviously already keeping you interested. You've drawn me a nice little bird there. Very nice.
Yeah, just to let you know, I'm not just another elected guy.
That's right. You're an artist as well. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's get right to the questions. We've had one come in from Diana, who has written in, and she says, I'd like to ask Mayor Dennis if Tapawingo Park can provide a public restroom for the people gathering at the park, the footbridge, the trails. Currently, the only options are businesses in the area. Thank you for considering this improvement to our community, she says.
Sure. I smacked my lips again, didn't I?
Yes.
I got to quit doing that.
Yes.
There's so much to learn about being in the broadcast world. I apologize. We have a plan that is going to radically change that entire area, and it is affiliated with the project for the riverfront. Tapawingo Park is designated to have a completely different look and feel. It's going to have water features. It's going to have more public amenities, such as restrooms, and it's going to actually be more closely interfaced between both cities. It's going to have that connectivity between the pedestrian bridge. And I'm sure that if you've asked any of the local community leaders about this, you've probably been told more information than you really care to hear. But the project itself is going to make both sides of the river destination points. And with that is obviously going to include the amenities. As it stands right now, there is restroom facilities in the ice skating rink house, but unfortunately, because of some of the sensitivity of some of the equipment that's in there, it's not open yet. But I can go ahead and talk to Jan Foley, our park superintendent, and see what we can do to make that a little bit more accommodating for our citizens.
And are you going to add other restroom facilities? As you know, we've talked about on this program, there's plans to add a beach to Tapawingo Park in the current master plan. Mm-hmm. And as you build that Brown Street Bridge, which has been talked about, it would seem like there are places you could put additional facilities. Are those in the plans?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. The whole point of having a space dedicated like that to having sort of an urban park is to make sure that when families go down there, they can park their car and they can spend the afternoon there. And obviously, if you don't have the necessary amenities to do that, people will come and go. And that's really not our intention. We want to make that so that you can traverse both sides of the river. You can go downtown Lafayette, or you can come and see uptown West Lafayette and have that sense of place and recognize that it's not just a quick stop, that you can spend the afternoon there and enjoy some of the things that are going to be there.
That was an interesting turn of phrase you just used. You said you could go to downtown Lafayette, or you said uptown West Lafayette.
Ah, you are very perceptive.
Are you trying to set yourself apart from your across-the-river neighbors?
No, we are trying to create... On both sides of the river, there's a lot of work going on, whether it be in conjunction with the State Street Project, whether it be in conjunction with Tapawingo Park, whether it be in conjunction with the downtown area in Lafayette. And we feel very strongly that probably not in my career lifetime, but at some point in our history, that people will look at the Wabash River area and both sides of the river as one metropolitan area. And we are referencing, just because of its geological location, our downtown area is sort of an uptown. And then Lafayette, again, because of its geographic location, is downtown, the established downtown.
I guess what I'm getting at is there's a connotation
status?
To uptown versus downtown. And you could, I suppose, if you wanted to, position yourself as the city literally on the hill, which Purdue has done sort of. But don't you have to be a little bit careful about how you message that?
You know, nowadays you have to be careful about everything. But the intent is sincere. The hope is that we will have that understanding of two locations in one really incredible metropolitan area. And I know that Tony and I both feel strongly that this is what people are attracted to. You know, you've got two cities with two unique personalities. And again, you've heard me talk about this ad infinitum. So the hope is now with that designation, and it's really nothing that we're going to have signs or anything like that. It's just how we reference it. And it's probably more insider baseball now than it really is something that's going to be presented in some formal fashion, at least for the near future. But that's what we believe, how we're going to craft what's going on with the State Street project, how we're going to craft what's going on with downtown Lafayette, and then how we're going to emphasize that focal area, which is going to be the riverfront, Tapawingo Park, and the near riverfront area of downtown Lafayette.
Let's talk a little bit about the State Street project, because someone has brought to my attention that your city now has plans to tear down a church, which is at the top of Chauncey Hill, and that church, of course, does not pay taxes. Mm-hmm. And in its place, your plans are to put a many-story high-rise, mm-hmm. which would, of course, would pay taxes, would add to your tax base significantly. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if this is a part of your plan to pay for State Street long-term, is to take out parcels that were not tax-paying entities and add in their place parcels that are, so that that area generates more money so that you're able to pay Purdue back the $60-plus million you're going to owe them over the next 20 or 30 years?
Well, actually, a bunch of answers to one long question. The first off is the actual transaction of the sale of the church and the private development company, we had nothing to do with that. That wasn't a city issue. That was between two private interests that made that deal.
But you're okay with it?
Well, generally speaking, yeah. I mean, if a private group wants to sell their property, or whether it be a citizen or whether it be a business, yeah, as long as it's not going to create huge problems within the area where it's designated to go, you know, we generally don't get notified and we generally don't intervene. But the actual the price tag of State Street was allocated through that particular TIF district prior to any development going in there. So there was a certain amount of money that based on the revenue of that particular TIF without development, that's been allocated to pay for the bonds for the State Street project. So that's already being paid for.
I will say, though, that you have – I mean, there's a couple of things about that. One, you could easily be said to have a – financial interest, the city, in not pushing back on this transaction. And, you know, our reporter Chris Marisibitza has reported on the fact that your TIF funding is running right up to the edge of what you can pay for. So any extra additional tax revenue you can get in that TIF district gives you a little bit more leeway, so you're not living as close to your means.
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt that this is going to be an economic boom for our community. That's one of the reasons why the State Street project was so enthusiastically embraced, because it's an option to do a lot of things in one fell swoop. First off, create a downtown, the environment of a downtown. Second off, obviously, to generate revenue for the city. And more importantly, to give people a sense of place. And I know I use the cliche a lot, but the fact of the matter is that's what we're talking about. Specifically with that particular structure, though, the it's called the Rise. That is part of a program that we've had in place for about 10 years. We have felt very strongly. When I first got elected, one of the issues that was brought to me with a great deal of passion was the challenge that some of our near campus neighborhoods had with that relationship between rental properties, student rental properties, and single family owned residential properties. And we were well aware of the fact that there were some things that we as a community, we as a city could do. Probably one of the first things that we started doing way back when was improving some of the services that we provided to those near campus areas. We got our trash pickup more regulated. We started recycling. We started commingling recycling. We had provided toters. I mean, all these different things to help clean up the area. Then we started doing a lot of work on the streets and sidewalks. Then we created what's called our neighborhood resource team that dealt specifically with issues such as house hygiene, issues with noise complaints, things like that, to help improve the area. And now we're finally doing what is part of this process, the natural evolutionary part of this process, and we're taking the students out of those residential areas because that's where their interests are now, is to get back into a campus setting and a densely populated campus setting to be around each other. So this has been a process that's been going on for quite some time now. It's just that right now, some of the real, the highly visible physical aspects of those processes coming forward, and it's really getting a lot of attention.
So where that church and its congregation are planning to go is into the Purdue Exponent building on Northwestern Avenue, or right on campus there. Another building that, by the way, isn't paying taxes because it's on campus, and so it's a university building, and so that works out well for the church. But I'm curious whether the city had any interest in what was going to happen to the student newspaper on campus and whether there were any unintended consequences of this, because you had the Exponent having this whole building to itself, and now its space is going to be dramatically truncated. I mentioned to Mitch Daniels when I talked with him for our monthly conversation that We've noticed that the Exponent has gone to only publishing a print publication a couple of days a week. Mm-hmm. Do you worry at all about whether this is going to have a deleterious impact on the student newspaper?
Our hope is that it does not. Our hope is that this is actually going to help. It'll give them a home. They will be there for a while. They will be, you know, continuously empowered to do what they do so well. But I think bigger picture, the challenge is now with the printed press. As one of our local reporters told me the other day, anybody who works in print now has to look and see that their future might not be as bright as, say, people that work in radio, the people that do a lot of their stuff on web-based media outlets. So I don't think so. You know, I think that that's a great breeding ground for reporters. I know that there's a lot of kids that go through and work on the Exponent that take that process and move on and continue in the news world with that. And then for us as, I guess, newsmakers, it's always great to have that interaction with the student population, specifically for me as being the mayor of Westside and having Purdue within my footprint here. I learn more. I learn from them as much as they hopefully learn from me. So I think all things are good.
So this plan works in part because you've got the ability to transfer into a new building that's on campus. We've talked with President Daniels about mm-hmm. his desire to have building space on campus used as efficiently as possible. Is there any other plan in place where you think you guys could have that kind of symbiotic relationship of you get to add to your tax base, they mm-hmm. get to use some space on campus that perhaps wasn't being used to its fullest? Has there been any sort of discussion about that being a relationship that you have going forward?
Well, probably not within this geographic footprint, the actual campus area, because a lot of that, the property is already owned, and the zoning and the laws that govern that are pretty well established. But definitely out on the western end, and then obviously up in the research park. There's a lot of things that we can do collaboratively there, and that we do actually do collaboratively to make things great for this community. And it's not just for the student population, because there's business interests that are going out there as well. So
this is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're talking today with West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. And we should say today's program has been pre-recorded, so unfortunately we cannot take your phone calls. But do feel free to always to email any of our four mayors at our email address, which is ask@WBAA.org. And you can tweet questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Well, as you were leaving our studios last month on mm-hmm. the program, you hinted that some people in the Republican Party especially might not be happy with some things you were going to say in your State of the City address. And following that speech, you said to one of our reporters, perhaps aimed sort of indirectly at the president, and I'm quoting now, "We like our society the way it's going. We like the forward momentum that society has. Don't take us back." Mm-hmm. Did you get any pushback for that?
Yes, I did. I did. I think that right now there's a lot of hypersensitivity when it comes to the political part of public service. You know, I think the divide between the political parties is really creating a lot of passion on both sides. And I think there is a belief system that if you're an elected official, that your number one priority is to follow the party dogma, to make sure that you stick with the party program. And because I don't come from a political environment, sometimes that's challenging for me to do. And because I've lived in West Lafayette all my life, that creates another set of standards that create a little bit of a hiccup when it comes to just, you know, being lockstepped into everything that everybody within a particular political discipline believe. But I'm a strong believer in learning from your experiences. And I've seen, because of the jobs that I've had, how subjective people can be based upon their impression of what their leadership is telling them. And my cautionary term is just be careful. Be careful. You know, political enthusiasm sometimes can translate to a lot of oppression. You know, a belief system on the part of some sort of political dogma can really create challenges for a society. I mean, look at our history. You know, a lot of times bad things have happened just because of a single problem or a single leader that doesn't get addressed properly or that sometimes misleads some folks. So we just need to be careful. You know, we have grown so much as a society. when you look back 10, 15, 20, 50 years ago, there were a lot of things that went on, whether it be based on bias, whether it be based on ignorance, whether it be based on some specific belief system, that have really oppressed people that live in this country. And I think that the pendulum is swinging towards trying to make sure that individual freedoms are still a priority for all of our elected officials. I know that that's what we do here in West Lafayette. So, sure. I mean, people often disagree with me. People often tell me that, you know, you're a great mayor, but you're not a very good Republican, or whatever they want to say. But the fact of the matter is that I was elected to lead. I wasn't elected to be somebody's political puppet. And I believe in that very firmly.
So did someone come up to you after your speech and say, I can't believe you took a swing at the president like that?
No, actually, nobody did. You know, a lot of stuff went on that meeting. I think they were more concerned about some of the other things that we were dealing with instead of that. And sometimes I think that when we talk about specific issues and how they affect our community, I think that there will be people on both sides of the spectrum that are going to be offended. And I differ, and I'll acknowledge that I do differ with other elected officials, because I'm not afraid to speak for my community. My community talks to me all the time. I am out. I am available. They know where I am. They know how to get a hold of me. And, you know, we have things that we do here because of the huge international population that we have, because we have an incredible academic institution here, and we're a very diverse community. We have people from all around the world that interact every day with local government. And sometimes if you take a particular position, whether you have the power of enforcement or not, it can generate something that's really difficult to control, and that's fear. If people are worried about government knocking on their door, asking for their visa or their passport, if they are worried about traffic stops being made based upon color or your appearance, that's a problem. And I absolutely don't agree with that.
Well, let me get to that for a second, because you have also said that you are not sure that the city should declare itself a sanctuary city, which would mean that you would not enforce some of the immigration regulations that are on the books. Mm-hmm. You had said that you wanted to find out whether any illegal deportation was going on before you made any action toward becoming a sanctuary city. Why is that your stance?
Well, right now, we've actually had, I think I mentioned it, that we're going to look into it to see what the legal parameters are. And as it stands right now, it is against the law in the state of Indiana to declare yourself a sanctuary city. It just is. And as an old police guy, I don't do things that are going to automatically be against the law. But it gets back into what we were just talking about a few minutes ago. It's fear. It is fear. There are people who are worried about somebody doing something, whether it be covertly or overtly, to seek and eliminate people that aren't here legally. And what I know about this community, because I've had experience on both sides of the river, generally that doesn't happen. Generally speaking, there's enough activity going on with our police departments that they focus on the crime that's real. They focus on making sure that this is a safe community. Immigration issues usually come down from another authority, and it's usually from the feds or the state, generally from the federal government. And then if we are in a position to do something, we will. If it abides to our policies and the law of the state of Indiana, we will.
So are you aware whether any city has actually challenged this law?
Well, remember, each state has different laws. I mean, in Illinois' law is different than Indiana's.
Right. Has any Indiana city challenged the Indiana law?
Not that I'm aware of, but that doesn't necessarily mean it isn't true.
Well, so here's one of the problems with the way lawmaking goes is lawmakers can make a law that says anything they want. Mm-hmm. I mean, they can make a law that says our air will not be 70% nitrogen, and it can go on the books.
Yeah.
And it is up to a challenge in many cases to change this. There are certainly plenty of states that have the ability for their cities to create sanctuary cities. Mm-hmm. I don't see that those laws are being challenged as unconstitutional. Mm-hmm. Your city is unique because you have a large international population that comes to Purdue University, but whether it's to be a student or to be a faculty member, do you not have something of a responsibility to think about being a city that maybe is the challenger of that law because you have a disproportionately large international community that it might benefit?
Well, it's funny because the process of getting into Purdue is pretty involved. I mean, an international student has to go through a vetting process to be accepted into Purdue as well. I mean, I think a lot of times we use the same standard that we would use to go to college, and it's more academic-based and then financially-based. But it, coming from another country, you have a process to go through. You know, they can bring their families over, and oftentimes they do. And their families come through a process where there's a visa established. There's timelines on that visa. For us, and again, I'm speaking only about being here for 10 years, we have not been made aware of a problem. We have not had the closest thing I can remember is right after 9/11. There was a huge push on local law enforcement, and this came from the federal government, to reach out and document or at least have contact with folks that come from Middle Eastern countries.
Well, so one of the problems following 9/11, and perhaps one of the problems now, is perception. Mm-hmm. It's not about the reality of the people. Mm-hmm. It's you don't look like us, and mm-hmm. therefore there
or
is
even more so, Stan, you look like the bad guy.
And therefore there is an irrational fear of people who are from other countries. And that is something I'm sure that, I mean, that you talked about in mm-hmm. your State of the City speech, wanting to present a welcoming face to mm-hmm. people. Purdue has a huge interest mm-hmm. in doing that, because not just of its bottom line, but indeed of trying to create a diverse educational community for everybody who comes here, whether they're from Whiteland or whether they're from Qatar. Mm-hmm. So don't you have a responsibility to the optics of this to try to do what you can to show that you are a welcoming community, even if it flies in the face mm-hmm. of state law?
Well, but their perception and reality, I guess. If there is a threat, if people feel threatened, it would be important. I mean, it would be important for us to know why. If somebody comes to my office and says, "John, I feel threatened. You know, all this stuff is coming down from the feds. I worry that my family is going to be affected. I worry what would happen if I were to go home."
Well, there was a rally on campus a few weeks ago where a couple hundred people walked to Memorial Mall, mm-hmm. and we covered it. Those people clearly feel pretty threatened.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so, I mean, there's obviously people around here in your community who say they feel threatened.
Sure. But like I said, we're dealing with fear. And there's not much I can do about that. If we were to declare ourselves a sanctuary city, it would mean nothing, because we would not have the force of law to support us. Would we be empowered to protest and say we're going to take this through the court process to see where this law falls? I think so. But I think that what's more important is to make sure that we are, like I said in my State of the City, a welcoming committee that welcomes all. You know, we as a city are not going to pursue you know, illegals. I mean, we're not in the business of looking at somebody saying, "Hey, wait a second, let me see a green card." We're not doing that. We've got other things we need to do. There's other priorities that we have when it comes to public safety, and our police department and our fire department do an amazing job of making sure that people feel safe and secure.
What we have seen in the last couple of years is communities, states, sometimes individual people, through the proliferation of media that we have now. People get remembered for things. Mm-hmm. You get remembered for good things or bad things. Mm-hmm. We don't have to remember too far back to remember the blowback that then Governor Pence got over the Religious Freedom Bill. Mm-hmm. And you and I talked about it on this show because, in part, you were one of the people who was mm-hmm. against it,
yeah,
very, very publicly.
The first mayor to come
right.
out against
and
it.
And so yeah. you are remembered for that. Mm-hmm. He is remembered for his part in it.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't you like to be remembered for taking something to court, even if it ends up failing? Mm-hmm. Isn't there a benefit potentially to your community as being one that is as welcoming and is willing to fight to be welcoming as you can possibly be?
Of course, sir. I mean, it's always good to be first. But you have to look at – I mean, it's a different thing. I mean, we're pretty busy doing what we're doing. And I'm not trying to cop out and say we're not going to do it because we just can't. I mean, we're busy doing what we're doing. The job's plural that we're doing in the city to ensure a safe and welcoming environment is comprehensive. To sue the state because of, you know, again, just for in a symbolic way, might be kind of interesting to do on paper, but there's costs, there's time, there's all different kinds of little mechanics that create problems. And then, you know, there's that other thing. How would we be viewed statewide? You know, what about this threat of the federal funds going away? like I told your reporter, we are involved with the federal government for a lot of different reasons, whether it be infrastructure, whether it be public safety, whether it be parks, whatever. There's a lot of interactivity between the feds. And, you know, I've never been afraid to poke the bear before. That's probably why I got so many broken bones and scars. But there are things that I don't want to do to hurt or to do any harm to my city. And because of that, I think that, you know, if we maintain a certain status within the boundaries of the city of West Lafayette, which includes Purdue University, and we make sure that our student population understands that they are welcomed here, I think that's as good as we can do.
Let me spend our last couple of minutes on a big discussion that's going on at the State House. The House Republican plan to raise taxes to do more road repairs has come out. There is division even within the Republican Party about this.
Go figure.
What is your thought on the idea of raising taxes on individual Hoosiers to try to raise the $1 to $1.2 billion extra dollars the state is going to need every year for at least the next 20 years just to maintain what we have?
Well, if not that, what? You know, as you well know, we've had these conversations before. I ride a motorcycle, and I spend a lot of times on our major thoroughfares and our secondary thoroughfares and even some of our minor arterials throughout the state of Indiana. And as a biker, they're rough. There is some work that needs to be done, and not just to make it, you know, smooth and pretty. I mean, there's some safety issues. A lot of the intersections aren't properly signalized. The shoulders on a lot of the roads are horrible. They're very unsafe. And, you know, if you want to roll the dice and think, well, you know, people are going to use alternative forms of transportation in the future, so maybe we can let some of these roads go away. I don't know. But they're pretty rough, and there needs to be a predictable revenue stream that would empower the state to go ahead and start taking on some of these major projects. Indiana, the population often shifts in Indiana. I know some years we gain, some years we lose. But, you know, we're called the Crossroads of America for a reason. You know, they might not live here, but they travel through a lot. And a lot of that truck traffic coming from the north or coming from the south, I mean, trucks just really, really beat the hell out of roads. So I think it's important. I think it's a good way, you know, that there's good taxes and there's bad taxes. And I think, you know, making sure that our infrastructure is sound, you know, specifically, you know, our interstate highways, our state highways, and as they affect our communities, I think that's pretty important. I've seen a lot of bad things happen on roads that aren't looked after, so I think that's a good way to go.
You asked if not what, and the response from House Democrats, like Minority Leader Scott Pelath, is, well, why do you continue to cut corporate taxes, which, by the way, are taxed at a much higher, could be a much more influential revenue generator than taxing individual Hoosiers? Mm-hmm. What do you make of that idea of increasing some of the corporate taxes rather than putting it on the backs of individual Hoosier drivers in 30 seconds?
Oh, 30 seconds. This isn't going to happen. Well, first off, I know one thing that really drives a lot of politicians' decisions in this state, and that's development, development, jobs, jobs. So I know that the general consensus is if we do anything to hurt development, bad Hoosier. I mean, that's just bad Indiana guy. So I think that they look at people who are more likely to utilize the roads. And so they'll look at the individual citizens. They'll look at the folks who generally – you know, worry about getting from point A to point B as safely as possible. So I think that the understanding is based upon, you know, an archaic system that encourages development, yet the secondary process is to make sure that revenue stream is predictable.
All right. Well, Mr. Mayor, thanks as always for your time. We've got to wrap it up there, but we look forward to talking again next month.
Hey, whatever I said that was too far, you can go ahead and edit it out.
This has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.